This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Regionally Speaking's Reporter Roundtable Thursday is now on, taking a look at education issues. And for that, we are turning to Carmen McCollum, who's education reporter for the Northwest Indiana Times. And thank you, as always, Carmen, for joining us on the program today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's start out first here talking about some good news from the Gary Community Schools, and in particular from the 21st Century Charter School in Gary. Raven Osborne is a teenager who's picked up her bachelor's degree again before she finished her high school diploma. And we have an interesting story to hear about her 1 year later. Go right ahead.
Yeah. A year later, young Raven is teaching in a classroom. She's working as a math and reading interventionist, which means that she takes children aside in small groups and she works with them on math and reading, sort of tutoring them and helping them to get through the lessons that they may not have gotten through in the classroom. Now, not only does she work with those who might be a little bit behind, she'll also work with those who are a little bit ahead. Mm-hmm. And then she puts together lesson plans for both of those groups of students so that they can work at their own pace a little bit and sort of help the ones who are behind move forward.
Now, I understand that she kind of took it in stride when some of the students there at the school that she was working with as an interventionist didn't exactly like her method of teaching, I suppose, so to speak.
I don't know if they didn't like her method of teaching.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe they realized that she was young.
Ah.
I'm not sure. And I think some of them, you know, little kids maybe challenged her a little bit. And she's learning how to work her way through that and put into effect her classroom management skills.
Now, tell us how the school administrators and fellow members of education team are working with her and helping her learn a little bit more, too, now that she's a new teacher, so to speak.
Yeah. She has a teacher mentor who helps her out quite a bit, and she also has other teachers who will come to her assistance as she is learning the ropes. She seems to be, and they say that she gets along well with the children and that she does very well on preparing lesson plans and putting those kinds of things together. She's just learning that whole classroom management and those skills.
Now we know that she's gotten her college degree, and of course she got her high school degree just, you know, this is about a year ago. What's plans for her as far as higher education is concerned?
She is planning to get her master's degree, and she's also planning to get her teacher's license. She's going to get the, you know, and a lot of times when they hire a new teacher, that person who is new may come in on an emergency license,
mm-hmm.
and then they give them time to get that teacher's license. She'll be working on that in the fall, and she'll also, as soon as she finishes that, and that should take her about a year, I'm not sure, a year and a half or something, somewhere in that line. And once she's finished with that, she does intend to get her master's degree. She wants to keep it in, she's interested in doing K through 8. She says she likes that K through 8 age level. She does not think she wants to go into the high school.
Mm-hmm.
She thinks she's maybe a little bit too close to their ages.
That's probably true. She's only 19, you know, we have to give her, at
19.
Least she is certainly smart enough to understand that, yes, it may not be quite time for her maturity-wise to make it into high school. That makes all the sense in the world.
And she will be 20 in August.
Okay. The Chicago School Board recently appointed a central high school principal as a new assistant superintendent. Fill us in about that administrative change, please.
East Chicago School Board met last week to make some changes and add to the administrative staff. Actually, Paige McNulty, who is the superintendent in East Chicago Schools, has been looking for an assistant superintendent for the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Did not have anybody in place. And I believe that the Central High School principal, Shauna Finley, who was named assistant superintendent, has been with the district approximately 3 years. And Shauna was moved up from Central High School principal to the assistant superintendent for Paige McNulty in the East Chicago schools. To replace Shauna over at East Chicago Central High School, they put in Dieta Wright, who is the principal at Block, who was the principal at Block Middle School. And mind you, Dieta has been with the school district for more than 25 years. She taught at the high school for many, many years before she became the principal over at Central. All of these moves will take effect July 1st.
Now, I understand that the appointment for Dr. Finley wasn't rushed right through. It was very, very well thought out, and apparently had little opposition. Tell us how that worked out.
Well, the vote on that, as I recall, was three yes, one no, and one abstention. Mm-hmm. And I think maybe the reason for that is because while Dieta Wright is from the East Chicago area and has been there teaching, Shauna Finley is not. And some of the board members maybe were a little bit unsure of promoting her to that assistant superintendent position. I think that what maybe swayed some of them is that she has brought in that junior ROTC program at East Chicago Central. She's working with Sergeant Richard Ligon, the retired military guy, and he has been helping her to get that in. It's going to take effect in the fall, and students, freshmen and sophomores, will be able to enroll in that junior ROTC program. In addition to that, I understand that she's gotten some really good grants at the high school, including a Lilly grant that they're able to use for the students. And one of the things that Dr. McNulty said to me was that they're hoping that she'll be able to bring that expertise into the central office in terms of getting grants and working with students and developing additional programs.
That's great to hear. Let me ask you too, Carmen, since you keep an eye on the East Chicago schools very closely, we know that it hasn't been all that many years ago that after Dr. McNulty became superintendent that she had a crisis of her own to deal with the unveiling of the information that showed that that the Calumet housing project was contaminated by lead, and led to the closing of the public housing project, and it had a big effect on the school system. How is the Chicago schools dealing these days with the aftermath of all of that?
Well, they're still working through that, still hoping to gain more students. They probably lost around 500 students as a result, and that was because those students had to move out of the West Calumet area. Mm-hmm. They had to go into different homes, different cities, and et cetera, and they moved around East Chicago. But some of them had to leave altogether and had to enroll in different school districts. So that caused, of course, a loss of money. They were able to get some state assistance, and that helped them through this year because they were able to include the number of kids even though they weren't there, and they were able to do that because of a law passed by the legislature. Things are looking up for them. They're rated a C overall as a school district, so that's certainly good for them. They've been able to move up despite some of the challenges they faced.
We're talking with Carmen McCollum, who's an education reporter for The Times. And one of the other stories that she had, a rather interesting feature, was dealing with some information coming out of a report from Washington on the state of local and national teacher shortages and what kind of impact this we've seen on a decline in teacher pay. Fill us in about that report and how Indiana and Northwest Indiana, for that matter, seems to rate.
Well, it's Indiana is near the bottom. Well, midway and close, still close to the bottom. They're not doing very well. Average pay in Indiana, according to the National Education Association, is about $54,000. Most schools in our area are not at $54,000. For example, Raven started as a new teacher. She started at $38,000. That's still considered low for our area. Many of our schools are starting right around somewhere between $38,000 and $41,000.
Well, I know, too, that the school districts are, of course, insisting that that new teachers get their master's as soon as they can. And certainly that means, of course, extra expense because they'll have to go back to school and bear that expense as well, even though it will benefit them, obviously, fairly quickly once they get their degree. Still, it's money that has to be spent, so they've got to be sure that they can cover all their expenses, too, I imagine.
Exactly, yeah.
What else in the report that you noted in talking with some of the other school officials, in particular in the school town of Munster, they're keeping a close eye on the impact that all of these costs, as well as what the teacher benefits happen to be for this, and trying to recover from this. Fill us in on what you learned from that.
Well, Munster is indeed keeping a close eye on everything and how things are going. Some of the Munster teachers, and particularly Ryan Ridgely, who is president of the union, is concerned about the pay and how it relates to the cost of insurance for teachers. Mm-hmm. He talks a lot about the fact that when you have to take out the amount of money that teachers are having to pay for a single plan or a family plan, it reduces the salary even further. So, for example, it costs a teacher who wants a family plan anywhere from $12,000 to $14,000.
Wow.
To pay for that, depending on which plan is chosen. And if you subtract that from the average teacher in Munster schools making about, $50,000.
Mm-hmm.
The average teacher pay in Munster is about $50,000. And then you figure the range is $38,000 to $72,767. They're definitely losing money.
And we know, too, that because it's had an impact on teacher salaries as well as other expenses within the school districts, we're finding more of our Northwest Indiana school districts are having to ask the voters in their particular communities for extra assistance. The referenda have been coming pretty quickly here, and I know that you featured that in the report as well.
Yeah, the referendums are coming, and we can expect more coming this fall. Every school district has not voted on it. Every school board has not voted on it.
Mm-hmm.
So although I've talked to them, I don't want to mention it until they have made that vote and it's public. But there are several districts that are looking at referendums, which you'll see in November and in coming up next year in May.
I would imagine. Carmen McCollum covers education issues for the Times of Northwest Indiana. And Carmen, as always, thank you for spending time with us today about this, and we'll be checking back in with you again soon.
Okay, thank you.
This is Ridgely Speaking, Reporters Roundtable Thursday on. Right now, let's take advantage of the moment and talk to Carol Carlson from the Post Tribune. Carol, thank you for joining us on the program today.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Well,
I was going to pause just so you could go into a panic. I'll talk to you.
Well, thank you very much. We appreciate that. Yeah, it's these things happen. I mean, there's not much you can do with live radio except just go with the flow, and we have. And you have a couple great stories we do want to talk about today. One of them is involving one of the best organizations in Northwest Indiana that will help people out in a pinch if they happen to be disabled or they need help and looking for work. They get some great education. And we're talking, of course, about Goodwill Industries. They are, of course, here in Northwest Indiana are expanding, and they just had, in fact, a groundbreaking ceremony here earlier this week to talk about their next operation. They're opening up in Gary. Tell us about that.
Yes, they are. They bought 8 acres of property in Gary. It's on Westridge Road next to Barini Lawn Decorations, which is just west of Clark Road, and they're planning to build a complex. It's the first time they've ever undertook this type of project in Indiana. There's going to be an Excel charter school, and that's a dropout recovery school for adults 18 and over. There's going to be a Goodwill outlet store, and they're going to have what they're calling a community career center for folks who are in the job market but need to brush up on their training skills. So in essence, you'll be able to get go pick up maybe a pair of used jeans and a high school diploma, a one-stop shop.
That's right. I know that they have done this in other locations, including here in Northwest Indiana, in other instances where you'll maybe get one or two of these facilities. Like we know for sure that Excel Center is located in Hammond. That's one of the latest ones that they put up here in Northwest Indiana. And we know that they do have the career centers located. In fact, they have one right next door to one of their latest new stores in Griffith. But it's without the combination of the kind of a triple threat in this case.
Right.
So it'll be interesting to see what kind of interest and expanse they are able to go to in the community. I know that there has been concern about residents in Gary having the training that they need for the jobs that are available, and this would be a great opportunity to pick up that training, I would imagine.
They're pretty excited about this, and this will be the 12th Excel Charter School in Indiana. They've got them scattered all over the state, started in Indianapolis, and they're working their way around the state, so it's going to be interesting to see how that develops. They're hoping to be able to rent the Ivy Tech building in Gary off of West East 35th Avenue and King Drive there until this their new school is ready, and they're projecting it'll be ready in about next April.
I understand, too, that Goodwill is also working very closely with some other organizations in the city of Gary on other topics besides helping people find work and education. They're working very closely, I guess, with Gary for Life, among other things, I understand.
Yeah, they work for with Gary for Life, which is the organization that tries to stem violence in the city and targets past offenders and pretty much... lays the law down on these folks. And the other initiative is one that hooks up registered nurses with first-time moms.
Now, going back to the Excel Center and all the educational opportunities that Goodwill is going to offer when they get this new facility built as part of the Gary area, I understand that they're one of the Gary school board members is very, very pro Goodwill. And in fact, he's even involved as a member of the Goodwill Advisory Board.
Yeah, Robert Buggs, who's vice president of the Gary School Board, as it's constituted now, put an asterisk on it,
sought
to change into an advisory board. They have one official school board meeting left. He is also on the Goodwill Advisory Board, so he was out at the groundbreaking, and he's a big supporter of the organization. I talked to him a little bit. He said Goodwill has always been there for veterans and for offenders getting out of prison, and it's an organization that he believes strongly in. The other thing that should be mentioned is the funding stream that will be used for these charter schools that are dropout recovery schools. Gary has another one. Does not come from the same K-12 funding stream that other charter schools in the city, the more conventional charter schools that are the K-12, rely upon. It comes from workforce development. So they're not, in essence, in competition with the traditional school district.
I know in your story, and it's been mentioned in some of the other information that Goodwill of Michiana sent out when they were making the announcement of the groundbreaking, was that what they're planning at this operation that they're going to be building there on Ridge Road just west of Clark Road is something that is very unique as far as Goodwill is concerned. It's not going to be your traditional retail store that you normally would go to, just like the new store that they built in Griffith. This is going to be an outlet store. What have they told you that that's going to be like?
They're going to be selling clothing by the pound.
Oh.
They call it a pound store, which obviously would be a pretty large quantity. And they said they get a lot of traffic from Chicago at these pound stores. So I guess I don't know that much about it myself. So I guess we'll have to see.
Well, I know the Goodwill Industries operates basically whenever they do get the material that's put out for resale. It comes to, say, an individual store. It comes in a big Gaylord box, basically, and they have staff members at each store sort through things and put them out on hangers on the racks. So this way they kind of sort from boxes in a bulk situation before they put them out for the shoppers to take a look at. So I suppose they'll probably just do some other kind of breakdown from the big box to smaller boxes, I would think.
Yeah, that's probably what they're talking
about.
That'll
be very interesting to see how that turns out. And we should mention again that the plans are to have this facility completely up and running here by April of 2019, to be sure. One of the other great stories that you had, Carol, in the Post-Tribune this week was telling us a little bit more about a situation involving some additional priests and other people involved with the Roman Catholic Diocese of Gary. Tell us about, and one of the people I understand is a former member of the media. Tell us about these new additions that Bishop Donald Hying is adding.
I had the pleasure of attending and covering the ordination of a priest, and he is the former reporter. His name's Jeff Burton, now Father Jeff Burton.
Mm-hmm.
And the deacon who will be a priest in a year is Declan McNicholas, and Declan is from Chesterton. So the ceremony and with all its ornate trappings took place on Saturday at the Cathedral of the Holy Angels.
Wow. Now, how many priests does that give the Diocese of Gary now with these new additions?
That will give them 130.
Yeah.
Won't count Declan yet. He'll have a year to wait.
Mm-hmm. Did the bishop have anything interesting to say about these new members of the fold, so to speak?
Yeah, he said that he explained the ceremony, because it is a little bit unusual. They lay prostrate on the floor in front of the altar, and that is significant of humility and them giving of themselves to God. And the bishop explained that before it happened, and then he talked a little bit about our world and our society today being self-absorbed, and about how these two young men are making the decision to go in the opposite direction.
Now, tell us a little bit more that you know about Father Jeff Burton. Tell us about him, why he found the interest in the calling, basically, to become a priest.
Father Jeff is from Valparaiso. His parents were there, and they presented the gifts of the wine and the bread at the altar, another part of that ceremony. Father Jeff is from Valparaiso, and he's 34, and he attended Valparaiso University and decided to be a journalist, and he worked in Elkhart for a year. Then he came back home and worked for the Times of Northwest Indiana for 4 or 5 years. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how long. He was based out of Porter County and covered crime, of all things. And he said the words that he put it in, he said it wasn't like there was a clap of thunder from on high when he had this epiphany-type moment. He said it was more subtle, and the feeling just became something that surrounded him everywhere he went to join the priesthood and to hear the call of God. And
Now, from what you know, have they found an assignment for him yet? Do they know what church he's going to be working out of?
He's going to be in Valparaiso at St. Paul. On Harrison, he'll be an associate priest.
Well, Father Jeff, welcome to the diocese. If you're not listening, that's fine too. But it's interesting to note that we have a layperson who has decided on the calling to become a member of the of God's family, and that's of course happening here in Northwest Indiana at the Roman Catholic Diocese of Gary, and Bishop Hying having installed to him and a deacon who will become a member of the priesthood as well too eventually too. And we have to thank Carol Carlson's who were able to get through on our truncated program today of our Reporters Roundtable Thursday. Thank you as always for being with us, and we hope that next time we have better luck with the phone system. Not our fault, it's the phone system, and we'll have better luck, and we'll talk again soon, I hope.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio.
This is Quantum Leap Soundbites, brought to you by Indiana Humanities. This series is part of Indiana Humanities' Quantum Leap Initiative, which invites Hoosiers to explore and celebrate the spirit of possibility and problem-solving that occurs when we bridge the humanities with science, technology, engineering, and math. Soundbites is sponsored by JPMorgan Chase. A large white bird with black-tipped wings glides through the air with incredible smoothness for its size. Its wings stretch for 7 feet, and it flies with its long neck stretched straight ahead and its legs straight out behind. The bird is a whooping crane, one of the small endangered population in North America. It is migrating from Canada to someplace warmer for the winter, and it is one of about 50 whooping cranes that choose Indiana's Goose Pond Park in Sullivan County for its winter resting spot. The whooping crane almost vanished from the earth in the 1940s. Then, only about 15 cranes were still in existence. Slowly, their worldwide population has grown to about 500 birds, and about 25% of them winter in Indiana. As the whooping crane settles into the wetlands of Goose Pond, he stands at an impressive 5 feet tall. This incredible bird, a living dinosaur, gives a few whoops, the signature call of the whooping crane that helps cranes find each other, especially during mating season. The whooping crane is not the only avian visitor to travel far distances to get to the Goose Pond. There are hundreds of other birds who stop over in Goose Pond, a notable group being shorebirds. Also known as wading birds, shorebirds hang out in shallow water and have an extraordinary migration pattern. Some travel all the way from the Arctic Circle to the east side of South America to countries like Venezuela. Adding a stop to Goose Pond, right here in Indiana, allows the birds to eat, rest, and regain strength for the rest of their exhausting thousand-mile journey. These birds didn't always have a sanctuary in Indiana. Sullivan County's Goose Pond used to be a large area of swampland with rich soil and nutrients. This caught the eye of farmers who drained the swamp and farmed it, as they did many places around the state, including Gene Stratton Porter's beloved loblolly marshes. In 2005, the Indiana government decided the area that is today Goose Pond would become the site of one of the largest restorations in the country. Around 9,000 acres were converted into a wetland conservation site. Over the last decade, it has become both an important ecological site and a place where researchers and scientists can observe birds and gauge the overall health of avian populations. Today, Goose Pond, nestled in southern Indiana, is one of the most significant birding areas in the nation. It's maintained by the Indiana Department of Natural Resources, but the community's love of the land has led to huge amounts of funding and integration into the community. This is mostly thanks to the group Friends of Goose Pond, which helps to bring scientists to count the number of species of birds, spiders, fish, and other animals. The Friends of Goose Pond hold an annual celebration called Marsh Madness, a time when Hoosiers can learn about conservation, grow their love of nature, and see the animals that seek refuge in Goose Pond. To create a relationship between children and nature has been the life's mission of Friends of Goose Pond member George Sly. George was born in 1946 in rural Sullivan County and grew up roaming around the forests, the pond behind his aunt's house, and around a neighbor's small farm. He fell deeply in love with nature. His high school science teacher, Edna J. Coiner at Duggar High School, encouraged his interest of the natural world. After graduating from high school, earning both his bachelor's and master's degrees from Indiana State University, George matched his vocation to his avocation and became a biologist. George's exceptional skills as a biologist allowed him opportunities to perform his scientific work around the world. He even spent 2 years in Malaysia as a Peace Corps volunteer, conducting scientific research and teaching at a university. However, he seems to always return to his home of Sullivan County. 12 years after graduating from high school, George became a high school teacher at his alma mater in Duggar and dedicated most of his life to his students, helping them to appreciate the beauty and intrigue of science. George thought it was more important to imbue all children with a love of nature, rather than encouraging all his children to become scientists like himself. George won several extremely prestigious teaching awards over his career, including being named one of the best science teachers in Indiana multiple times. Now he spends his retirement continuing to inspire the love of nature in children through his work at Goose Pond, where he's a member of the board of Friends of Goose Pond and acts as the organization's internal science guy and is usually the one in charge of counting all of the small mammals and insects. Today we saw 4 examples of highly innovative lives. The whooping crane fighting against extinction and exploring new sanctuaries. The shorebird plotting new stops on her route to Venezuela to survive her long journey. George Sly, whose years as an educator and as a member of Friends of Goose Pond have inspired generations of Hoosiers to cherish nature and to conserve it. And, of course, the Indiana government's innovative efforts to restore such a huge wetland showed initiative and forethought, and in so doing created an internationally significant birding area. Several of the bird species that now depend on Goose Pond for survival might have been wiped from the face of the earth had it never been restored. Tune in next time for more tales of incredible Hoosier innovation. Indiana Humanities connects people, opens minds, and enriches lives. This has been Quantum Leap Soundbites, brought to you by JPMorgan Chase, and I'm Sandra Burton.
That's it for Regionally Speaking for today and for this week. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to the reporters we're able to bring on today on the program, Carmen McCollum with the Times of Northwest Indiana and Carol Carlson from the Post Tribune. And we'll be back with you on Monday with another week of Regionally Speaking programs.